Then the abbé's conclusions. Savants, though you may try your hardest to explain these facts by natural causes, you will not succeed. He thinks that the artillery of heaven had been directed against the impious town council. However, people with cabbages suffered more than people with impieties. What appeared most worthy of notice was that the hailstones, which should have been precipitated to the ground, in accordance with the laws of acceleration of falling bodies, appeared to have fallen from a height of but a few yards. But other, or unmarked, hailstones, in this storm, did considerable damage. The abbé says that many persons had seen the images. He collected the signatures of 50 persons who asserted that they had been witnesses. I notice several details. One is the matter of a hailstone with a seam around it, as if it had been cast in a mold. This looks as if some hoaxer, or pietist who was all prepared, having prophetic knowledge that an extraordinary shower of big hailstones was coming, had cast printed lumps of ice in a mold. But accounts of big hailstones, ridged or seamed, are common. Another detail is something that I should say the Abbé Gueniot had never before heard of. The detail of slow-falling objects is common in stories of occult occurrences, but, though for more than 10 years I have had an eye for such reports, in reading of hundreds, or thousands, of hailstorms, I know of only half a dozen records of slow-falling hailstones. In the English Mechanic, 87-507, there is more upon this subject. It is said that, according to the newspapers of Remiremont, these prints were inside the hailstones, and were found on surfaces of hailstones that had been split, that 107 persons had given testimony to the Bishop of Saint-Die, and that several scientists, one of whom was M. de Laparent, the secretary of the French Academy, had been consulted. The opinion of M. de Laparent was that lightning might have struck a medal of the Virgin, and might have reproduced the image upon the hailstones. I have never come upon any other supposition that there can be manifold reproductions of images, or prints, by lightning. The stories of lightning pictures are mostly unsatisfactory, because most of them are of alleged pictures of leaves of trees, and, when investigated, turn out to be simply forked veinings, not very leaf-like. There is no other record, findable by me, of hailstones said to be pictorially marked by lightning, or by anything else. It would be much of coincidence, if, at a time of religious excitement in Remiremont, lightning should make its only known, or reported, pictures on hailstones, and make those pictures religious emblems. But that the religious excitement did have much to do with the religious pictures on hailstones, is thinkable by me. 19. The astronomers are issuing pronouncements upon what can't be seen with telescopes. The physicists are announcing discoveries that can't be seen with microscopes. I wonder whether anybody can see any meaning in an accusation that my stories are about invisibles. I am a sensationalist. And it is supposed that modern science, which is supposed to be my chief opposition, is remote from me and my methods. In December, 1931, Dr. Hugh Mason, of Mount Wilson Observatory, announced his discovery of two nebulae that are speeding away from this Earth, at a rate of 15,000 miles a second. There was a race. Professor Hubble started it in the year 1930, with announced discoveries of nebulae rushing away at a mere 2,000 or 3,000 miles a second. In March, 1931, somebody held the record with an 8,000-mile nebula. At this time of writing, Dr. Hugh Mason is ahead. When a tabloid newspaper reporter announces speedy doings by more or less nebulous citizens, as ascertained by him, by methods that did not necessarily indicate anything of the kind, his performance is called sensationalism. It is my statement that Dr. Hubble and Dr. Hugh Mason are making their announcements, as inferences from a method that does not necessarily indicate anything of the kind. In the New York Herald Tribune, January 6, 1932, Dr. Charles B. Davenport, of the Department of Genetics, in Carnegie Institution, received only 4 inches of space for one of those scares that used to be spread-headed unknown disease that may wipe out all humanity. Sometime in the future our boasted skyscrapers may become inhabited by bats, and the safe deposit vaults of our cities become the caves of wild animals. The unknown disease is antiquated sensationalism. I look back at my own notion of the appearance of Worthings in the streets of New York. I now have a little story that pleases me, not so much because I think that I at least hold my own with my professorial rivals, but because, with it, I exercise some of those detective abilities that all of us, even professional detectives, possibly, are so sure we have. I reconstruct, according to my abilities, an incident that occurred somewhere near the city of Wolverhampton, England, about the 1st of December, 1890. The part of the story of which I have no record that is the hypothetical part is that, at this time, somewhere near Wolverhampton, lived a tormented young man. He was a good young man. Not really, of course, if nothing's real. But he approximated. Though for months he had not gone traveling, he was obsessed with a vividly detailed scene of himself, behaving in an unseemly manner to a female, in a railway compartment. There was another mystery. Somebody had asked him to account for his absence, somewhere, about the 1st of December, whereas he was convinced that he had not been absent and yet but he could make nothing of these two mysteries. Upon the Thursday before the 6th of December, 1890, see the Birmingham Daily Post, December 6, a woman was traveling alone, in a compartment of a train from Wolverhampton to Snow Hill. According to my reconstruction, she began to think of stories of reprehensible conduct by predatory males to females traveling alone in railway compartments. The part of the story that I take from the Birmingham Post is that when a train went past Soho Station, a woman fell from it. She gave her name as Matilda Crawford, and said that a young man had insulted her. An odd detail is that it was not her statement that she had leaped from the train, but that the insulting young man had pushed her through a window. In the next compartment had sat a detective. At an inquiry, he testified that at least so far as went his observations upon visible entrances and exits there had been nobody but this woman in this compartment. In the New York Herald Tribune, January 23, 1932, was published an explanation, by Dr. Frederick B. Robinson, president of New York City College, of some of us sensationalists. Professors have not scored so well in making good appearances from the publicity standpoint, Dr. Robinson said. Living sheltered lives, he added, they yearn for public notice and sometimes get it at the expense of their college. Surely a great New England institution was not elevated in public esteem when one of its professors of English engaged in a series of publicity stunts, the first of which was to give solemn advice to young men to be snobs. At a meeting of the American Chemical Society, at Buffalo, NY, September 3, 1931, Dr. William Engelbach told of cases in which, by the use of glandular extracts, the height of dwarfed children had been increased an inch or two. For the announcement of this mild little miracle, he received several inches of newspaper space. New York Times, December 16, 1931, meeting of the Institute of Advanced Education, at the Rorick Museum, New York, something more like a miracle. I measured. Dr. Lewis Berman got 11 inches of newspaper space. Dr. Behrman's announcement was that the sorcerers of his cult, the endocrinologists, would breed human beings 16 feet high. Meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, in New Orleans, December, 1931, report upon the work of Dr. Richard P. Strong, of the Harvard Medical School, in the matter of the filaria worms that infest human bodies and an attempt to make it more interesting. That an ancient mystery had been solved, biblical story of the fiery serpents at last explained. There's no more resemblance between these tiny worms and the big fiery things that we are told grabbed people, than between any caterpillar and a red-hot elephant. But that the filaria worms had been identified as the fiery monsters of antiquity was considered a good story, and was given much space in the newspapers. However, see an editorial, not altogether admiring, in the New York Herald Tribune, January 5, 1932. Still, I do, after a fashion, hold my own. New York Sunday, October 9, 1931. That, shortly after the Civil War, Captain Neil Curry sailed from Liverpool to San Francisco. The vessel caught fire, about 1,500 miles off the west coast of Mexico. The captain, his wife, and two children, and 32 members of the crew took to three small boats, and headed for the mainland. Then details of suffering for water. Talk of miracles. In the midst of the ocean, they found themselves in a volume of fresh water. I note the statement that Captain Curry discovered fresh water around the boats, not by a disturbance of any kind, but because of the green color of it, contrasting with the blue of the salt water. I wrote to Captain Curry, who at the time of my writing was living in Emporia, Kansas, and received an answer from him, dated October 21, 1931, saying that the story in the Sun was accurate except as to the time, that the occurrence had been in the year 1881. Here is something, both very different and strikingly similar, which I take from Dr. Richardson's journal, as quoted by Sir John Franklin, in his narrative of a journey to the Polar Sea, p. 157, a story of a young Chippewyan Indian. His wife had died, and he was trying to save his newborn child. To still its cries, he applied it to his breast, praying earnestly to the great master of life, to assist him. The force of the powerful passion by which he was actuated produced the same effect in his case, as it has done in some others, which are recorded. A flow of milk actually took place from his breast.